Hello, Bermuda. Welcome to Best Health, presented by the Royal Gazette and RG Mags. This is your go-to health podcast, connecting you with Bermuda's finest in health and wellness. Before we get this important conversation started, we want to give a huge shout out to our sponsor for this episode, the Bermuda Cancer and Health Center, providing cancer care and support to the community of Bermuda. Now let's dive in. Welcome back to another episode of the Best Health Podcast. I'm your host, Carrie Astwood of Carrie Lee Fitness. And with me today in the studio is Dr. Janae Harvey from Tomorrow's Voices. And we're really excited to have her with us today because this is Autism Awareness Month. And she's going to shed some light on all things autism. So welcome.
Yeah, welcome and welcome to everyone who's listening. Spreading awareness and learning more is definitely a part of my journey and a part of the vision and mission of Tomorrow's Voices. So thank you for listening in. We hope you enjoy.
Awesome. So, Dr. Harvey, why don't we start with some introductions? Mm-hmm. How'd you get started in this field? Like, what inspired you? Why this line of work?
And it's so funny. That question, when I think about the answer, it's so well-rounded in regards to Tomorrow's Voices vision, right? So we work with individuals who have autism, but we also have university student interns. So my journey is very interesting. I always had an interest, always loved helping people. I knew I wanted to get into the field of psychology. Did my undergrad in psychology as well as a dual degree in speech pathology and audiology. Towards the end of my undergrad, I had to do a placement practicum. And I did my placement practicum at Tomorrow's Voices.
Oh, no way.
And it's so funny. I went to Tomorrow's Voices, and I was battling with, do I want to go psych? Do I want to go speech? And when I did that practicum, I was like, oh, my goodness. This is a happy blend of the two. So I said, okay, this is what I want to do. I went back, and I did my master's. From that point, I then started to hone in and fine-tune my degree path moving forward because of that placement. And it's so interesting because we have such a great passion for growing the field, and that's actually my journey. So Tomorrow's Voices was a part of my full circle journey, and wow. I'm happy to be able to say that I've done that for others, right? So just how Tomorrow's Voices did that for me, we have a lot of individuals that work at Tomorrow's Voices who started as interns, right? Wow. So growing the field, growing the passion, spreading the knowledge, the awareness, and the science.
Yeah, just building the community and providing jobs for Bermudians. That's amazing. How long has Tomorrow's Voices been in existence?
We are actually going into our 17th year.
Oh, wow. 17?
Yes, 17 years as a charity. Started off in 2007. Small organization, brainchild of two parents. So we had two parents who... they went overseas, they got a diagnosis, and the recommendation said that they needed X amount of hours of applied behavior analysis overseen by a board-certified behavior analyst. At that point, there was no such thing on island. So they pretty much said, if you move here, then everything will be okay. The parents were like, well, I want my child to grow up with their family and their community. So they came back, they started to outsource therapists, and it was just so taxing and tedious that they knew that this journey, it just wasn't feasible for any parent to do, right?
Yeah.
So from there, they got together, and that was the actual birth of the organization.
Wow.
Started with four clients, four staff members, and we do provide one-to-one services. Now we've grown substantially. We have a number of different programs, and one of which is our early intervention program as well as our adult service.
Wow. So all ages.
That's amazing. Exactly.
So would it be like, just trying to understand a little bit more about everything that you guys do, is it like a school like where some kids would attend regularly?
And that's actually the biggest common misconception.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of people think that we're a school. We're actually a recognized medical center.
Okay.
So individuals come to us for their behavioral sessions in appointment slots. So their appointment slots are about 3 hours a session for X amount of sessions per week. So if they are school age, they do also go to their school placement as well. Yeah, so we are recognized by insurance companies, internationally recognized CPT codes. They come. We pretty much what we're doing is reverse inclusion. So we're working on things that they find difficult. The reason that we work one-on-one is because it's not going to be ethical or appropriate to work on things that they find difficult in front of their peers, right? So we give them the practice, we give them the tools so that they can go in their environment, whether it be school, whether it be nursery, whether for adult to be a work placement, and they go and then they generalize those skills to that placement.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
A lot of research, a lot of data-driven organization, data-driven science.
That's wonderful. You know, and so needed here. Like I said, I can't imagine, like, as a parent, you know, you find out, okay, you know, my child's been diagnosed with autism, you know, and I'm sure for many, like, parents are just like, okay, well, what can we do about this, right? And, and if there's that many, you know, bridges to cross, you know, it just makes it that much more stressful, you know, as opposed to being like, okay, well, there's resources. Like, we can live a, you know, perfectly happy life. And to have that on island, you know, because it's hard, like, it, you know, to go overseas, like you said, community's so important. And I'm sure for the child as well, you know, being around family and everything too.
And that's how we grow, how we learn, right? We learn so much of what we do as individuals is shaped by our community, right? But we also not just cater to the interns and the students, the clients directly. We have parent support groups. We have bi-monthly workshops for the other professionals or the parents who are wanting to take part in that. So we want to make sure that we have a holistic approach to spreading awareness and spreading knowledge.
Because, it wouldn't, like, I feel at least, and I'm sure you can agree with this, like, it wouldn't just fall on the individual. Like, okay, well, you have autism, so here's how you have to learn how to adapt to the world. It's like, well, how can the world adapt to you, right? It's not your fault that the world's not set up for
how
you learn.
We're in this as a community. We're in this together.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, I think I actually just heard online, I may have seen that, where Walmart was having, like, certain hours in the morning where there was no, like, it was, like, low sensory or where they had, like, the lights dimmed and, like, the TVs were off, and it was, like, a special, like, hour where those who may have autism or sensory processing disorder could come in and shop without the overstimulation, I guess.
And I'm glad you mentioned that. So over the summer, we have a summer program, and we are immersed into our community, and we have so many community partners when we go on to, because we try to mirror it similar to a neurotypically developing camp, per se, so outings and beach days and different things like that. And when we go on outings, the community partners are so accommodating. Say, for example, if we go to the movie theater, they'll ask, do you want the lights on? Do you want the lights off? What volume do you want? It's just so nice to see that we have that here on island. And the more we do that, the more we'll grow and learn, and those resources will be available to parents. But not only that, the clients can have the opportunity to practice them at, you know, maybe a lower sensory input so that they can practice to go over and over and over to normal levels, right? Meeting them where they're at so that they can grow to just access their community just as their peers do.
No, I think that's fantastic. And I know Bermuda, you know, oftentimes people joke that we're, you know, maybe 10 years behind and stuff, but it sounds like, you know, with this, and I mean, obviously the whole point of Autism Awareness Month is to spread the awareness. So, you know, because we can't, like, change what we don't know. Right? And, you know, when you are neurotypical and you're used to it, like, you wouldn't know any different, right?
Exactly.
So you'd assume that everyone else is just different, right? And it's like no, it's just they learn in a different way, right?
Exactly.
And the world's been set up for us.
So
obviously I'm kind of getting a little bit ahead of myself and talking about sensory stuff. Let's take a step back. For those who are listening that maybe, you know, you have heard of autism but you don't quite understand what it is, can you provide, like, an overview of autism spectrum disorder?
Of course.
Our listeners who, like, might not be familiar with it.
Of course. So autism is a developmental disability. So you can have a physical disability. So with a physical disability, you can look at the person and see that they may need modifications or some type of accommodation, right? Mm-hmm. With a developmental disability, commonly known as an invisible disability, you may look across at that individual and not know that by the time they come to you, they need support. So the way I like to explain it is, what do you think about when you think about development, right? So when I think about development, I think about developmental milestones. So when do we check those boxes at the pediatrician? When do you walk? When do you talk? When do you crawl? And so forth. So with a developmental disability such as autism, there are developmental delays. So there are delays specifically in the area of communication. So they may speak a little bit later. They may have difficulties in communication. So there are also areas within socialization. The individual with autism may engage in restrictive or repetitive behaviors. So that's a nice, well-rounded definition of what autism is and a way to kind of look at it in alignment with other things that you're seeing so that you can kind of see that distinction in the disability, yeah.
Right. And it's, you know, like in the name, like spectrum, like it's different in every person, right? Like I know personally, you know, people with autism, and there's some who, you know, they function, you know, pretty well, or at least have had to, maybe got diagnosed later in life. And then there's those that I've met who are nonverbal, right? Who don't communicate. So I guess that's the essence of it being on a spectrum, is that it's different.
It's a wide spectrum. Not only is it a wide spectrum, autism is actually the most dual diagnosed disorder. So with that meaning, you have this wide part of a spectrum, but individuals within that part, they may have another diagnosis alongside that, even widening the pool more so. So definitely, if you've met, you probably heard the saying, if you met one individual with autism, you've met one individual with autism. So yeah, definitely, everyone's going to be a unique individual.
Okay. And I'm sure, you know, this is something I like to ask in most of my interviews. As far as like misconceptions, you know, because again, with awareness, like we may be walking around thinking that, you know, everyone with autism is the person who, what's the one on, I saw online that drew like the New York City skyline from memory after seeing it one time, right? Like, or I don't know, seeing like the movie Rain Man or something, you may just have this image in your head, right? What are some common misconceptions with autism?
One is that, you know, if you met one individual, then everyone kind of mirrors that profile. Another common misconception is that because individuals with autism, they do have difficulties with social interaction. So a common misconception is that they may want to be left alone. They may not want friends. They may actually want to engage, but they don't know how. I'm speaking and I keep saying may because it depends on each individual. Another common misconception is that individuals who are less impacted, they may need less support or less resources. And that is a big common misconception, because what's happening internally, what the research is saying, is that those individuals, although they're not displaying it, you know, physically, or you're not really seeing that, they have larger gaps in regards to the emotional exhaustion that they are competing with to kind of navigate the world accordingly and present less impacted. So definitely want to take that into consideration, because what you see is may not be what is happening behind closed doors, right? So those are a few common misconceptions.
The word masking is coming to mind. Like you were saying that, like what you see may not masking. Be what's going on inside, right? And living in a world like this, from what I understand, masking is, you know, trying to put up a front so that you can appear more neurotypical, right? And trying to assimilate, you know, obviously, you know, it can be traumatic in itself, right? And exhausting for someone.
And I'm glad you mentioned that word. So someone asked me the other day, is it boys, are boys more common to have autism than females? And it's so interesting that you say masking, because what the research is saying is, yes, we have a higher diagnosis with boys, but there's not actually a higher number with boys. So what's really going on that the research is saying is that females are presenting differently. They have higher levels of masking. They are having higher levels of exhaustion. So they're not presenting, quote unquote, classically autistic, the textbook term or the textbook explanation, but they are leaving for the day and they are kind of flat out. They're depleted because they're saying, don't tap, don't spin, don't do this. They're kind of keeping all of that together, and they're quite emotionally drained.
Absolutely. You're trying to be someone that you're not constantly. Exactly. Like, it's, of course, you'd be exhausted,
it's
right?
Exhausting.
And doing that constantly. And then, you know, like you said, the misconception that they might need less care, being told, like, oh, you're fine, you look fine, right?
But what's happening inside, right?
Exactly. And I'm sure the long term, right? It's like, you know, 1,000 paper cuts, like over and over again, right? The impact. So I think that's great to know. Because, again, there's so many misconceptions about it. So in regards to, like, you know, parents and caregivers, you know, maybe new parents, like, what are some of the early signs? I know you mentioned, like, obviously developmental, but are there any early signs and symptoms that you could share?
Yeah, so some common early signs would be lack of eye contact, delayed speech, really looking at those milestones and have you met those milestones. But the main one would be lack of eye contact, delayed speech, very rigid, so restrictive and repetitive behaviors, whether that be lining things up or whether that be a very tight routine. So those are some of the early signs in addition to developmental milestones. Some parents, especially first-time parents, they may not have anything that they're referencing in regards to developmental milestones, unlike parents who had there was a sibling, so that they know what marks they checked before they have something to compare it to.
Right.
So with parents or first-time parents, they may not know. So definitely going to your screenings, definitely going to your pediatrician so that they can give you those developmental norms and get that information in accordance for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At what age would someone typically get diagnosed?
It depends on the individual. Yeah. Individuals can get diagnosed as early as 2 years old.
Okay.
But depending on the individual, sometimes they try not to do it that early because they want to ensure that, you know, they're ruling out certain scenarios. But I spoke to someone the other day who was an adult and they just got diagnosed, right? So early intervention is key. And a lot of people ask about, you know, what is early intervention? And I like to stress that early intervention is not by age. It's not the individual getting intervention as early as, you know, 2 years old or 4 years old or 5 years old. The individual who's 32 years old, the early intervention is getting intervention as soon as you understand or identify that you need intervention and support, because that's what early intervention is. Early intervention is support, giving you opportunities, giving you strategies so that you can be successful in navigating your world and your environment.
Yeah. How young, like, what's your youngest, like, people that you work with? Like?
So we work with individuals from 2 in our early intervention program, from 2 to 21 years old. In our Thriving Beyond 21 program, we have individuals 21 and beyond, and they are thriving in that program.
I love that name, yeah. Thriving Beyond. I love that.
Yeah, definitely. We have a wide range of learners. We also have a Saturday social skills program, drop-in program.
Nice.
And with that program, we have about 5 to 6 different groups, mainly because we don't want to, everyone's an individual, right? So we don't want to group individuals all in one category. We want to make sure that the groups are appropriate so that they have like-minded peers so that they can get the most from those social interactions as possible, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's great. I love the name of that. So as far as, like, what Tomorrow's Voices offers, like, what therapeutic techniques or interventions have you guys found to be most effective when working with individuals? And I'm sure, obviously, it's different for each one, but...
Yeah. So we go with applied behavior analysis. Yep. That is the one that has the most research, specifically applied behavior analysis overseen by a board certified behavior analyst, because you want to make sure that they are well-versed in the principles, there's the appropriate level of supervision. So with applied behavior analysis, we are really tapping into the principles of behavior. When you start talking about each individual and how we modify for each individual, because there's a high emphasis on motivation, everyone's motivation is going to be different. So we're always using the same principles in regards to prompting and data taking and so forth, but everyone's strategy is going to be different because we have to identify what's their baseline. Where are they currently? What are they interested in? Do they like toys or do they like movies? How do we contrive opportunities for them to work on the skills that they find challenging or tricky and so forth? And that's where you start to get into that variation and individualization for each person.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, what role would family members play? Like, I know you said support, but do they come in quite often and work one-on-one with you as well? Or
not necessarily directly in session,
but
parents play a really large role in the whole journey, right?
Yeah.
Family members, community members play a large role specifically in not just support, but in advocating and spreading awareness.
Yeah.
So a lot of times people ask me in the community, what can I do as a community member? How can I help make the community more accepting. And for me, I always say an increase in awareness. Because there's no cookie cutter approach, there's no cookie cutter answer. However, if you have an understanding of how an individual presents, then you have a better understanding of how to pivot and navigate to meet their needs, because there's going to be a slight tweak here, a slight change here, because each individual is going to be slightly or drastically different depending on how they present. But the more awareness you have, first step, listening to podcasts such as this, right? Absolutely. Maybe reading a tip sheet or something like that. The more awareness you have, the better you'll be able to pivot yourself accordingly to best help the community on a whole.
Yeah. Absolutely. Because I can imagine for a caretaker or a parent, you know, if you don't actually understand what's going on with your child's brain, you may think they're being, you know, disobedient or rude or something. But, you know, from that place of understanding, you know, there you can show compassion and like some empathy and, you know, it just makes it easier for the caregiver as well, right?
And I'm glad you said that, because what I find is individuals who are less impaired or who display less impaired, they are often put in the category of rude because they're completely verbal and they present very, very, very similar to their neurotypically developing peers, but they do have emotion regulation differences, right? Yes. And because they're emotion regulation differences, sometimes we may say or categorize that as a rude individual or disobedient individual instead of let's backtrack, let's look at their diagnosis. Why are they presenting like that, right? So I do notice a distinction in that realm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, like, mentioning about the developmental delays in communication and social skills. So, you know, at Tomorrow's Voices, how do you guys help to, you know, grow those skills?
Yeah.
Like, through communication, especially for a child who's nonverbal. Like, how do they communicate what they need?
Yeah. So communication is key. We want to make sure that everyone has an effective communication system so that they can navigate their environment.
Yeah.
If they don't have a socially appropriate communication system, they may resort to a socially inappropriate communication system. Yeah. As you mentioned, some individuals may be nonverbal. So for individuals who are nonverbal, we want to equip them with something that they can be successful with. Whether that's pointing, gestures, picture exchange communication system, maybe teaching them how to use an augmentative communication device, right? So first we want to make sure that they have a successful communication system. And then also we want to make sure that we identify what are they trying to communicate so that if we do need to put an intervention in place, the intervention is in alignment with the function that they're trying to access.
Yeah. I've seen, you're mentioning like the pictures, like I've I have friends on Instagram, obviously. When you're on Instagram a lot, like, you know, that's where my job is most of the time. I've met a lot of people and actually specifically a lot of behavior analysts. And there's whose son is autistic and she posts so much of the work she does with him. And he has a picture board.
Okay, yeah.
And is thriving with it, you know, can point to everything that he needs. Is that something that you guys use?
Yes. So depending on each individual, we want to first look at the individual and identify what skills they have. If their scanning is great, then maybe picture would be great for them. If their motor imitation is a little bit stronger, maybe sign would be stronger. Yep. But we also want to make sure that their environment is equipped to receive the information, right? Picture boards, definitely. We want to make sure that we're very systematic. We don't just say, here's this picture board. We may have to say, here's one picture, and then associate that one picture with one item so that they understand the concept.
Right.
Or not just using pictures, maybe using their iPad so that they can say the iPad and press the buttons, I want a break, or I want mom, or I want the playground, right? And they can use that to communicate on their behalf. But we want to make sure that we're systematic, and for us to know if we're being systematic, that is the reliance on data, right? So that's where our data comes in, that's where our analysis comes in. We want to make sure that we are providing the necessary levels of prompts, fading them out, and so forth. So heavy, heavy, heavy reliance on data.
That's great. And I mean, just like the relief, I'm sure that the child must feel to be able to say, I want a break, you know, rather than just, you know, maybe having a meltdown.
Exactly.
I know that's something that I've seen that can be common, right? Yep. Especially when they're overstimulated or sure just feeling misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine not being able to communicate what you want, right? I feel like we have a hard enough time when you're trying to maybe explain yourself to somebody and it's exactly. like, they're not getting it. And you're like, why don't you understand what I mean?
It's right? frustrating,
and,
right?
Yeah. So, you know, for these little people, you know, and for adults maybe who have never understood that there's actually something that can be done to help them, right? Like their whole life with late diagnosis. I think that's wonderful that we have those resources here on island. Are there any challenges, you know, that people may face, like, on the road to getting support for autism?
Yeah, there are always challenges with everything. You will have your obstacles. I want to speak specifically to the adult population, mainly because what I notice is as we talk about autism and as there I have seen a growth in awareness, acceptance, and preparation, I've seen that level of growth for the younger populations, and I haven't really seen much growth for the aging population. So with autism being a developmental disability, there's no cure. You don't outgrow it, right? It's something that you have indefinitely, right? So as I look around at the community, and this is one of the reasons we actually started Thrive and Beyond 21, this is one of our newest programs, but really want to see more growth because it's almost like you got support or we're growing in support and then you age out of support, right? So you want to make sure that we're just as much as we're building and growing and advocating at the younger levels, we're laying those same bricks and foundations at the same time for the adult population, because if we're not doing it at the same time, then it's almost like you've developed or you created or you've started something here, and then you're starting from scratch on the other side of the fence. So want to make sure that we are looking at the whole lifespan, making sure that what happens if an individual who needs ongoing support in their adult life and then their parent is no longer here. What's the next step, right? What's available for them? So we want to make sure that we're looking at, you know, the whole lifespan in regards to access and support and resources.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, if you have a caretaker that you depend on that that understands you the
best,
right? And then you're thrust into society and it's like, you know, just going out, maybe you're pointing at something and someone else is looking at you like, I don't know what that means.
Exactly.
Right. I'm sure that could be quite traumatic for an individual. So like how can we as a community, society become more aware and inclusive of those with autism?
So if you have the opportunity to engage with someone who has autism, if that's something that you've never had the opportunity to do and you have the time and you're interested, with our Saturday Social Skills Program, it's specifically a give back to the community. So it's for respite for the parents, but it actually runs by a subset of community workers. So individuals who work in the bank, in retail, in real estate, and so forth, and then university student interns. So the university student interns are getting hands-on exposure before they solidify their degree to see if that's where they want to go. And the individual who works at the cafe or the bank or so forth, they're getting opportunity to work with the population so that when our clients are in the bank, at the cafe, they have an ally. They have someone. And it's a drop-in, casual volunteer. If you just want to have that opportunity, being mindful, we have very strict confidentiality policies. However, it just allows you to say that, I get it. It's not just on paper for me. I've seen it. I've exposed myself to it. So if that's something that people are interested in, we can make that available. I know time is of the essence, so not everyone may have that opportunity to do that. But if you see an individual, just be mindful, maybe observe, see how the individual is being, supported and kind of identify if for some reason they need support. Maybe you may be someone to support. What we've created for some parents, parents of the community, if this applies to you, definitely give us a call. But we've created support cards. So say, for example, if you're a caregiver and you're in the grocery store and you're navigating your learner and your learner needs additional support, but there's now individuals who are unsure what's going on, you can pass them the card to say, you know, we have autism, this is what this looks like. And it also has tips and strategies so that you can kind of get some knowledge from that and walk away a little bit, as a community member, a little bit more prepared for maybe the next community member who is exhibiting or experiencing something like that.
That's awesome. You know, and it's just like bit by bit, right? Every person that knows a little bit more, right?
Exactly. You can just create a more
inclusive society where someone can feel like seen or understood when they go in, you know, like I said, like to the cafe, to the store. No, I think that's wonderful.
I will say that I've seen growth in, especially in the community, especially when we go out in summer. You know, if I'm working with an individual who is having a difficult time with a challenge or a transition, community members say, oh, it's okay. Or even after the individual has now become successful, community members coming to the staff members and saying, you did an amazing job. So, like, even that feedback is really good. I mean, it's uplifting to say, you know, you saw that, you were okay with that, you witnessed that, you stood by it as a community member, right?
Yeah.
So starting to see more and more of that, which is great.
Oh, that's wonderful, you know, especially like being just such a small, tight-knit community, right? Like we're kind of like, you know, it's like a big family, like people look out for each other.
Exactly.
And like, you know, to be able to do that, you know, for individuals who have like ASD, like I think that's, you know, it's just so important.
Yeah.
So, like, to wrap this up, and I could actually go on for a while, I feel like I've learned so much here today. What advice would you have for, like, parents, caregivers, educators in general? Like, if you have any last bits of advice or tips who have autism?
So, one of the biggest things that I try to stress is self-care.
Yep.
And I think sometimes in the journey, we focus so much on what needs to be done that there's no refuel process, right? And if we're not fueling ourselves, then we become weaker and we're not able to give back to our loved one or the individual that we're working with. And sometimes, and I want to stress, don't feel guilty for self-care, because sometimes parents will say, well, I don't have time for that because all of these things need to be done. You have to have self-care. That is the biggest, the most important thing for you to be able to stay in a capacity to pour.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fill your own cup up first, right? And be able to regulate yourself, right? Like that self-regulation, I understand as a parent myself. And I learned that from a young age. As soon as I started to relax more, or, you know, get that shower or brush my teeth, which I was avoiding, you know, the first few weeks, he started to relax more, you know, he feeds off my energy.
Exactly.
And yeah, so I think that's, I love that. And I actually feel like most podcast episodes, I no matter who is on here as a guest, that ends up being a common theme.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good.
It's just self-care. It's like, you know, down to the basics.
And it's
like,
funny, as much as it's common, sometimes we feel good. I know sometimes I'm like, oh, I don't have time for self-care, but we have to do it. We have to do it, right?
Yeah. And sometimes it can be as much as just finding like a pocket of joy for yourself throughout the day to maybe hydrate and take like 10 cleansing breaths or something, right? Just to take care of yourself. So I love that. Dr. Harvey, it's been a pleasure to have you here today.
Likewise.
You know, and again, guys, this is Autism Awareness Month. There's lots of stuff being posted and shared throughout the island. I'm sure, do you guys have any events or anything?
We have a number of events coming up. We're going to be having Autism Rock Socks, Tag Days. We're going to be having workshops. So definitely look at our social media handles if you want more information. If you want to give us a direct call, I know some people have personal questions or are going through a personal journey, you can call us. Our number is 297-4342. So if you wanted to call to learn more or just ask a question, we're here, we're an ear, and we're available for you. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay.
That wraps up today's episode of the Best Health Podcast. A big thank you to our sponsor for this episode, the Bermuda Cancer and Health Center. I'd love to hear your thoughts on today's discussion. Head on over to our social media pages at the Royal Gazette and at RG Mags on Instagram and Facebook and share your insights. Until next time, Bermuda, stay healthy and stay inspired.